I got cut in my face in one fight. One, you can barely tell. And two, I heard statistically that scars make you more attractive. It's not a big deal. Those heal and you just continue on. Faces heal really well. Your body heals itself really well. And with that, welcome to Always Stop It, your show where the news of the day is usually given just enough time, but sometimes not enough. If this is your first time stopping by, we thank you, and get ready for something you won't find anywhere else. I'm John Franklin. I'm joined by the godfather of Fight Night Picks, Craig Allen. Craig, how are you?
John Franklin, I'm well. It's been a weird day up here in the life of Craig Allen, up here in the Great White North. Listen, there's been a lot of news out there, MMA news all week. And the fact that, you know what? I've worn this shirt on air before, Experience Regina. If you haven't checked out that video, it's out there on YouTube. It's a great song. But I found out about it from Jay and Dan. And John, listen, you guys in the United States of America, you kicked out my guys, Jay and Dan. They spent 4 years down there on FS1. You didn't watch it. A lot of people didn't watch it. And so they shipped them back up to Canada. But today, Bell Media decided that they wanted to part ways with Dan O'Toole. And I'm outraged. Frankly, I'm very upset about this. I grew up with Jay and Dan. I don't want to see them separated. Hopefully Dan lands on his feet elsewhere. But yeah, it's a weird day. It's a sad day. It's the end of an era.
Well, I can only speak as an American here when I talk about those two guys. I remember them. I remember them being funny. But I also remember the reaction to them in the States was that they were kind of like a cheap knockoff of whatever we were doing on SportsCenter. Now, that short sells them drastically. Because the more, like, I listened to their podcast later on, and I started to get their humor. So it's more on me than it was on them. So it's a shame that they're, anytime those guys aren't together doing content, which I'm sure, you know, with the way podcasting is, they'll do something. They're too great together to not do something. But, yeah, it's a shame. I agree with you. But we begin with Go Talk Craig this week in what may have been an attempt to remain relevant. Kenny Florian said that a well-known coach who he would not name said that GSP is preparing for a fight with Khabib Nurmagomedov. Craig, do you find this report credible to begin with, and can they just give us this fight or not? Is it enough already with the teasing?
John, we've spent 50 plus episodes together with Early Stoppage on two different networks, and it seems like every single episode we say, hey, GSP should fight Khabib. Hey, we should, like, just, you know, talk this into existence. Did Kenny Florian just talk to, like, Jim from Bob's Gym down the road one day? Is that what he did? Like, who is this mystery coach? Now, listen, I've heard there's a possibility from Luke Thomas with Brian Campbell on Morning Combat. Luke kind of speculated as to the fact that it could be Frost Sahabi. Kenny Florian trained with him later on in his career. Maybe that's the missing link. And that's a coach that really kind of leaked this one. I don't know. I mean, GSP is now salon quality GSP. Khabib seems to think that he's moved on. He's got EFC. He's looking after that whole world in terms of being a promoter and really raising the next group of champions up through his organization. But to me, I would think that Florian would lend a little bit of credibility to this. Now, again, what coach was it? Do you think it was some guy backstage with BattleBots that brought this one up? Like, it's really tough to tell. But I think where there's smoke, there's fire. It's just that there's been fire around this for what? Like, realistically, 3 years, 4 years? Like, how long have people been calling for this?
At minimum, since Khabib beat Conor, which has been a couple of years. At minimum, probably before that. I think, you know, I like some of what Luke Thomas and Brian Campbell do. They seem a little bit too much like us, but that's either here or there. I think that, you know, for me, Frost Sahabi's a little too on the nose. I'm sure it's a little bit down. I'm sure it's that gym, but it's a little bit down the road, a little bit further from Frost. I don't know that. My guess would be when Frost heard Kenny say that, he wasn't happy about it. Well, maybe Frost nudged him. Maybe he said, listen, Kenny, let's get some traction behind this. GSP's training. I'm trying to figure out, you know, is it that these two want to make something happen and the third party's the problem? Just like, you know, us two. We want to be on The Ringer. We want to be on Barstool Sports. We want to be on ESPN. It's just that damn third party that keeps getting in the way and preventing these things from happening. So I guess if you can't join them, you got to beat them. So here we go. Well, listen, I think that this is the fight. The problem is the UFC cannot figure out the right stakes. Is this for a belt? Is it not for a belt? Is it at 55? Is it at 70? There's a lot of things you can do here. You know, if you want to – Khabib still has the belt. You want to do the fight at 55? Okay. That gives GSP a reason to come back. You want to do it at 70? Now Khabib wins at 70, and maybe Khabib goes and fights Usman. Now he's got two belts. So you got choices. It's just a matter of what you want to do. I think these two guys want to fight each other, but the UFC can't get out of their own way.
We'll have to see what happens. And John, listen, with Fight Night Picks, there's no better way to close out a final segment than let's get into it. But realistically, there's that one. A close second one is it's tradition around here to put a little extra on the last wing. And Dustin Poirier got to take part in one half of those catchphrases. Now, John, major takeaways from Dustin Poirier's appearance on Hot Ones with Sean Evans was the fact that Theo Vaughn is now training in some sort of martial art. I mean, I guess that's what happens when you have time away from Brendan Schaub and you're in Nashville. And Poirier was really complimentary of Conor McGregor. Now, does this, you know, kind of factor of Dustin Poirier raising his own personal brand, does it kind of get to a point where he's going to start moving beyond a McGregor trilogy? Or is that just going to be something that continues to pop up on the online whisper network and those damned online message boards?
I think a little bit of both. I think, listen, going on Hot Ones is genius for a couple of reasons. One, he's got hot sauce. Two, he's starting to pull away, meaning he's not completely associated with Conor McGregor. Say what you want to say about Khabib Nurmagomedov. Can't tell the story about Khabib Nurmagomedov without Conor McGregor, right? You're starting to be able to tell the story of Dustin Poirier without Conor McGregor because, in the way that Hot Ones is marketed, you just see when you go to their page or when you look up their stuff, you get into this vortex of watching Hot Ones for 3 hours, and it's like there's Snoop and there's Shaq and then there's Dustin Poirier. So he seems like he's in that company, whether he's in that company or not. And I think that – so, again, genius move on his part. I think – and we'll get to it in the next segment about the McGregor – Poirier trilogy. I think, again, there are some opportunities for Poirier that are available that are unique to McGregor, both in the cage and outside of it. This kid could really sort of take that foundation of his, take a few other things, and really run with it.
I really think it's great for Dustin Poirier. I mean, obviously, he had his own hot sauce debuted in January, the Diamond. It's from a company up here in Canada. How about that? Way to go. But overall, yeah, you continue to raise your profile, and we've all been there watching Hot Ones. And like you said, you're there for, you know, a 15 minute spot. And then 3 or 4 hours later, it's like, holy crap, I just lost part of my day. But you look at it in that sense, and he performed admirably. He made it through the board. Spoiler alert. He did a lot better than DJ Khaled, who wimped out on like the second or third wing. Another one. But yeah, I think this is great. And if he continues to, you know, go into spots like this, it definitely doesn't damage your brand. The only thing you don't want to do, you don't want to be like David Ayers that was up here in Canada that filled in as like the emergency backup when he played for the Leafs against Carolina, or vice versa, played for Carolina against the Leafs. And then he did every single show on the internet. He was on like Colbert. He was on every single show. And then, oh, okay, well, now everybody knows David Ayers, and it was a flash in the pan. I think for Dustin Poirier, MMA fans have known him all the way up. And I think this just continues to raise his brand to where, hey, maybe Dustin Poirier is such a draw that you remember when Dana White on Looking for a Fight, the last episode, went to Khabib and said, hey, this pay-per-view between Poirier and McGregor, it's trending even higher than your pay-per-view with McGregor. We got to get you back. So maybe Dustin Poirier being on Hot Ones, that one's going to push Khabib over and he's going to want a rematch. I don't know, but I think it really lessens the mood on, hey, we need to see McGregor Poirier 3, and it really raises Poirier's brand and profile to where maybe he fights the BMF Masvidal in 170 pounds. Like, maybe we really push him into a huge fight, and he doesn't need to be the B-side to somebody else's A-side.
You know, listen, the ace in the hole for Poirier, and we'll get to the trilogy fight here in just a matter of seconds, but the ace in the hole for Poirier is that Jolie Poirier, his wife. First of all, she's loved on social media by women and men. Secondly, and I won't tell you who, because, you know, we got to have some secrets. I'll tell you guys on the Patreon. But I reached out to a buddy of mine on Twitter who produces documentaries for ESPN and produces things for Dana White. And I said, you know, you really should pitch a show with Dustin and Jolie Poirier. I mentioned this when I did the recap show with Matt. Because that would be an amazing piece of content to add to UFC Fight Pass. His response was, Yeah, there's a lot of interesting anime couples. I pitched them recently on doing something on Amanda and Nina. So they're thinking that way. I think Amanda and Nina, I think Dustin and Jolie. Like I said, there's more to this. And just so you know, if it goes down, and this is completely cliche and hacky, Beauty and the Beast. That's what you go with the Jolie. Either that or Diamonds Are Forever. All right, Craig. Conor McGregor spent valuable social media real estate this week advocating for a trilogy fight with Dustin Poirier. Craig, Conor wants to fight. Dustin wants to fight. We just talked about this. First, should they both want the fight? And more importantly, should the UFC want the fight?
Conor, at this point, to really save his spot in the division, needs a fight. Now, one of the ridiculous things in the rabbit holes that I went down today, Gregor Gillespie's ranked 15th in this division. He hasn't won a fight in 2 years. Ally Quinta's ranked 11th. He hasn't won a fight in 2 years plus. So this division is already pretty thin at the bottom, pretty heavy at the top. So Conor McGregor take a fight against really whoever he wants, and he probably doesn't lose a lot of standing. That's all I'm saying there. But really, if he wants to get back into that title picture, he needs that second win against Dustin Poirier. For Dustin Poirier, the money would be great, but he doesn't necessarily need the fight as much as McGregor does. For Poirier, it's a fight against Khabib. It's a fight against Charlie Olives. It's a fight against Chandler. It's a fight against, like I said, maybe Masvidal. Let's get those rumors going. I haven't heard them yet, so I'm getting excited about it. But I don't think Dustin Poirier needs it as much as McGregor at this point, because if we checked out social media, even lately, like you said, Dustin Poirier's on Hot Ones. Dustin Poirier's doing this, that, and the other thing. Conor McGregor's digging dirt on a beach and talking about Dustin Poirier. Who needs the fight more, John?
It'd be Conor McGregor. Well, I mean, Conor McGregor doesn't need to fight at all, but if we're talking about in fighting, yes, Conor McGregor needs it more. And I'm with you, but, you know, here's our Chael reference for the week, or at least our first one. Chael Sonnen said once long ago, the best fight to take, and the only person that's ever really successfully figured this out was Floyd Mayweather. The best fight to take is always the easiest fight for the most money. So if you're Dustin Poirier, what's the easiest fight for the most money?
It's Conor McGregor. Logan Paul.
Yeah, maybe. It's Conor McGregor. So I think that's why Dustin is entertaining this. And I think that he has an exit strategy. And all this talk, you know, it's funny how Dana says when guys start mentioning retirement, they should just go, unless it's a guy he wants to stick around. And I think that, you know, in Poirier's case, he has other things he wants to do. He said his love for it's not there. But he is kind of, it's the gift and the curse, right? He's gifted to be at the top of his game right now. He's cursed with the fact that he doesn't have a love for it anymore because he's been doing it for so long. So I don't know. If you're him, do you cash that check and ride off into the sunset? Or do you – because, listen, if you lose to Charles Oliveira, here's the good thing if you're in Poirier's position. You can lose to Oliveira and then lose to Chandler. The Conor fight's still there. So I think that he could – if he wants the belt, he can – leverage the situation for the belt. The question is, can he leverage the situation for the belt against any one of those three guys? If that's the case, then fight Conor because you just beat him.
Exactly. So, John, let's parlay this into an earlier topic that we had really to start off the show. And I was so surprised by the different news and cuts today. The UFC ended up parting ways with 11 different names. This I read on my MMA news, and some of the bigger names, the three biggest ones that I could find, Antonio Carlos Jr., who just fought Brad Tavares. And listen, on the recap show, I've never heard somebody so high on late career Brad Tavares than John Franklin. Like, what did Brad Tavares do to you? Brad Tavares getting that win over Carlos Jr., that was enough to kick him out of the promotion. Spike Carlisle, the Alpha Ginger, he's now gone. And Marcus Perez, and I read a tweet from friend of the show, Marcel Dorf, that Marcus Perez asked the UFC to be released, which I found incredibly surprising. So out of these names and all 11, do any of them surprise you at all? And do you think that we're going to see more cuts in the near future?
Well, I guess the question is this, you know, addition by subtraction, meaning am I able to keep a guy with a big name because I cut 11 guys with medium names? If that's the case, well, then, yeah, it makes sense. The reason why a guy like Overeem or a guy like Shogun remains on the roster is because you got to sacrifice, you know, Carl's Jr. and Spike Carlisle, the Alpha Ginger. I think that, you know, the reality, Craig, is that if these guys were that big of a deal being cut, we would have led the show with them. right? And we didn't. They made it a little further down the rundown. So I don't think that there's anybody here that really surprised me necessarily, or anybody that's really going to be missed. Are any of these guys going to make a splash in Bellator or PFL?
Well, I mean, I look at Shoeface and his striking was pretty darn bad, but this is a guy that won the Ultimate Fighter at heavyweight. There was still a narrative. You could make the case that his fights are incredibly competitive and his jiu-jitsu is at a top level. It's just that he hadn't won recently. He was on a 3-fight skid. Spike Carlisle looked great in his first fight. He knocked out Alon Cruz, looked amazing on short notice. And then his gas tank was terrible against Billy Q. And then he lost his last fight as well. And if you want to go down a really weird rabbit hole, John, check out Spike Carlisle's Instagram. I don't think that's the stuff that you want to see people posting if you're employing them. Marcus Perez, on the other hand, you know, was an LFA middleweight champ, had a win over Ian Heinisch to win the belt, came into the UFC and was just kind of bleh. Like, I mean, he had a lot of punch, but he had bad cardio. He wasn't winning fights. He took that short notice fight against Dalcha Linjambula. He lost that. He lost to Dricus Du Plessis. Like, wasn't the most exciting fighter. Could Marcus Perez go over to a PFL or a Bellator? Could he go over to a PFL, though, and have a good run? I think he could have a good run with the PFL, but not necessarily with Bellator. So, did any of the names surprise me? No, not necessarily. You know, obviously, there were some other names, but again, didn't even bother to mention them because it wasn't necessarily a drop in the bucket. Like, Carl Minus, he looked like, you know, Look pretty bad. We'll just put it that way in his UFC appearances. Anthony Ivey looked, you know, pretty bad too. So all this to say, hopefully these fighters land on their feet, but I wasn't overly surprised by any of the names.
Yeah. And listen, we'll get into the PFL and what they're going to be doing this summer shortly. But I did notice when the PFL released their rosters or brackets or whatever for the tournaments, there were a few TBAs on there, Craig. So some of these guys could be TBAs of the future. Craig, let's move on. Paige VanZant and Britton Hart weighed in today. And guess what? They're on weight and don't like each other. Ugh. Or maybe they were just hyping a fight. Who's to say? Craig, PVZ will always draw eyes. But is she enough to draw a respectable number of pay-per-view buys for BKFC?
Funny you ask, John Franklin. I did something that I haven't done in a really long time for a podcast. I do this all the time for, you know, our fight picks. You just don't know it behind the scenes. So here's your bit of inside baseball. John, I'm going to go over to my handy dandy tool called Google Trends. And I looked up all of the lower promotions. And by that, I didn't search the UFC because that would just skim the total top. And if you never use Google Trends, it's a really fun tool to use. So my search terms I used were Bellator, I use PFL, I use BKFC, Knuckle Mania, which is their pay-per-view on Friday night. And then I use something that I didn't think of on Friday night. I thought of it after the fact. I saw it pop up on my timeline on Twitter. I might actually pay for this. I looked up Rough and Rowdy because Billy Football is going to fight Jose Canseco and you're darn tootin', I'll be there for that. So you look at everything, and the way the Google Trends works, it's out of 0 to 100, and it goes by what ranked the highest that day. So Bellator pretty much leads the pack. With the PFL's roster announcements and little things, they kind of pop up a little bit. BKFC is pretty low for the week until today when they reached 100 on the scale of 100. Rough and Rowdy, in terms of numbers, is at 54, Bellator 19, PFL 28, and Knuckle Mania 7. So nobody's looking up Knuckle Mania unless they're on, you know, an explicit website where there's naked ladies. But if I look at this overall, I think it's great that BKFC just on their own is trending high enough. But to me, I've watched some of this pre-fight stuff and I'm not into BKFC. I've made that known. But they show Paige VanZant going to American Top Team and Austin Vanderford, her husband, saying, you know, at the start, I told Paige this is a bad idea. I didn't want her going there. And then they show her coach going, yeah, I don't think this is a good idea. Cut to, but we're training her like it's a good idea. And then they're showing all this high-level training that Paige VanZant's doing at American Top Team. Cut to Britton Hart, who's picking up a heavy bag on a slide in her backyard and training in Virginia. And then they cut to her coach that's like, yeah, I didn't think it was a good idea either when she wanted to fight because, frankly, look at her. And I'm paraphrasing, but she's a decent-looking woman. I don't think anybody should bare-knuckle fight. Then they show Britton Hart's fights. John, have you even looked at Britton Hart's record? We talked about this. 4-4-3 boxing record, and she's 1-2 in BKFC. Her losses are to Christine Faria, that people know in combat sports, and Beck Rawlings. Do I think she's going to win this fight? Most likely not. But can she hype a fight? Well, if you watch the pre-fight annex, yes, she can hype a fight. So I think Britton Hart's really going to win PVZ over, especially with, you know, Combat Sports fans again. She's going to really help out BKFC. Even if Britton Hart loses at 1-3, she's not going to be like a UFC roster cut. BKFC will keep her around. She's a lot of fun. But overall, I think that they're probably going to do all right numbers if they're winning over. Like, if they're searching, if their search rank is over Barstool right now with just Rough and Rowdy, I think they're doing a good job.
Yeah, and real quick, if you guys are bored, go check out Billy Football's bio on Twitter, because I just did. It's a lot of fun. So don't bring the kids. So, yeah, I think that Paige VanZant can make a difference. I just can't wrap my head around her. I really can't. Because I look at her and I figure, okay, who are her fans, right? Is she liked or hated by women? Is she liked or hated by men? And in what way is she liked or hated by them, right? So if she let's say she's hated by women and liked by men. Because a lot of times when you're on Instagram, you're liked by women. Like they want to kind of emulate what you're doing, and if you post the right content. I just can't imagine that either of her fans, whether they be women or men, would want to watch her fight bare knuckle. That's where my only pushback from the Google Trends. But listen, the numbers don't lie. So I think that it's interesting for me. I just can't imagine that people would want to see her rather do this than be on Dancing with the Stars.
So I was paying individually for fights on Fight TV. Like if I ever went back and watched like M1 Global and I missed it, I'd pay like the $5. I'd watch it. I just got a subscription for the year. It was only $50. That's not a plug for Fight TV, but I'm over there for this. Pretty sure I have to pay for the pay-per-view if I want to watch it. I'm going to list off the names on this card, John. I don't want to spend too much time on BKFC because again, not a fan, but Chris Jensen, Big Boy, is going to fight Dylan Kleckler, Bad Boy. Charissa Segala is going to fight Killa B, Taylor Starling. Haim Ghazali, you know, the jiu-jitsu practitioner from Israel, is going to fight the great one, John McAllister, whose record in whatever fight sport he's a part of is 0-6. I saw you perk up for Haim Ghazali. You're going to like the next names. John Chalbeck, the Florida Keys kid, is going to fight the best looking and greatest nicknamed man I've ever seen in combat sports. I'm not lying. Rockhard Greg Bono. Lorenzo Hunt, the juggernaut, is going to fight Robert Morrow, the destroyer, who's 23-21. And again, I've talked about Robert Morrow on this show before. Go look at that guy's Tapology page. He fought like a guy that looked like Ivan Shkritov with Bellator and beat him, weighing 213 for heavyweight. Zach Zane, God's Warrior from Bellator, is going to be fighting Smash Martin Brown. Chris Lieben's going to fight Quentin Henry, the hero, because who isn't there for a crippler fight at this point in time? Johnny Bedford, we talked about him, is going to fight Dat Nguyen. And then PVZ, 8-5 in MMA, 12-gauge, fighting 4-4-3 Britton Hart in the main event. If that doesn't get you excited about a pay-per-view, John Franklin, I don't know what will. And I'd say back to you, but it's my turn. And John, I don't know who's going to be watching Knucklemania this weekend. I know I won't. But Stephen A. Smith came out this week, and he had some pretty crazy things to say. And really, he said that he doesn't need to see women fighting in MMA. That sentiment was received about as well as you'd expect it to, and he was dragged for the next 2 days. I won't ask you if you agree or not, because it might be the end of this podcast. We might end up in a Tim Walsh, Casey Kenney, and Sugar Sean O'Malley type situation. But I will ask you this. Why does Stephen A. Smith have to have such trash MMA takes? And why do we continue to have to hear them?
Well, listen, I think that Stephen A. Smith is a guy who understands, like we talked about earlier with Kenny Florian, obviously Stephen A. Smith has taken this to a whole nother level. He understands, you know, a few things. One, he understands how to remain relevant. And two, he understands what can I say and get away with saying. Right now, there is a misogynistic lean to this statement, right? But the way that he couches it is to say that he loves women so much that he doesn't. The guys that don't want women to fight, they do this crazy thing, which is like kind of like, you know, guys who have wanted women to not do other things in history. Women shouldn't go to war because why would you want to see a woman in war? She wants to be there. And she can help. That's why women go to war. not because you think they should be doing whatever you think they should be doing. Same thing here. If a woman can fight and wants to fight, they should be allowed to fight. And Stephen A. Smith, again, knows how to go right up to that edge, say these things that are polarizing, get attention for them, and then walk them back just enough that he saves face, but he has it mastered. So I think that he is also, in a lot of ways, the voice of the casual. So the people that listen and follow Stephen A. Smith don't care about correct MMA takes. They have the same takes probably, or damn near them. So yeah, I think that's why he gets away with what he gets away with.
Wasn't it the Diaz-Masvidal card where they had Joe Rogan and then they had Stephen A and people got all riled up about it? I think it was that card.
Yeah.
And it seemed like, to me, it seemed like since that card, Stephen A started to get entrenched a little bit more in MMA. And we saw these takes that weren't awful. Like, you know, they were kind of ridiculous, a little outlandish, but overall they weren't terrible. And then he's got this one. And the focus that I saw was in how negative that one sentence was. And then after that, like you said, he really tried to kind of position himself in a way where, oh, he can't really get mad at me. No, you can, because the first thing that you said was ridiculous. It doesn't matter what you say after that. The first thing that you said was so outlandish and ridiculous. And listen, this is a guy who wore the big cowboy hat and walked through the bar, and he riles up a lot of fans. And you know Stephen A. by this point. I would think you'd know him. But yeah, this was worse than, you know, Skip and Shannon Sharp trying to talk about Conor McGregor and Nate Diaz and him putting them tangs on him. Like, it was so bad. So for me, Stephen A is a big name with ESPN. They're never going to, you know, reprimand him. He probably didn't even get a slap on the wrist for this. But as MMA fans, as fight fans, as people who live in the year 2021, we realize how stupid that sentence was and how ridiculous that take was. And hopefully a lot of people wake up and they're kind of, you know, a little bit more wise to Stephen A in the MMA sphere, because a lot of MMA fans on Twitter, they're insulated to just MMA. They don't like to hear about the NBA when Ariel Helwani has, you know, interviews with NBA players. They don't want to hear that. It's just MMA. But the rest of the world, but a lot of people like other sports, and they get out of their house every once in a while in not COVID times. And they watch other things. And yeah, Stephen A's been around for a long time, but I think that this is just an outdated statement and it's a little bit ridiculous.
Well, you know, one thing that I think gets missed in the whole Stephen A, Skip Bayless relationship when they were together is that they took a lot from each other. What Skip Bayless took from Stephen A is that he could really push the line with the racial stuff, and he could seem like, man, he's really going after a lot of, you know, African-American players here. In our normal circumstances, we might think that he's sort of targeting them and read into it, but Stephen A gives him a pass in a way, right? Because if he goes too far, Stephen A will check him. That's what Skip got from Stephen A. What Stephen A got from Skip was, how far can I push it? How far can I really push it where a segment of the population dislikes me, but I still get to keep my job, I'm polarizing, I'm popular? Stephen A. Smith is some mixture of Floyd Mayweather and Skip Bayless, where he knows just how far enough to push it, and he can really lean into being a polarizing figure. Because realistically, he can be a very likable guy, but he chooses his spots when he can build his brand by every once in a while being, you know, wearing the black hat, every once in a while being the heel. He knows when to do it. All right, Craig, let's move on to sparring sessions. Craig, Patricio Pitbull came out and said Michael Chandler's UFC success reflects how good I am and Bellator's talent level. Do you agree with Pitbull's comments, or did he just get lucky Chandler caught Hooker sleeping and now he's kind of trying to dine out on it?
Those crazy Pitbull brothers, they love Twitter and they love to say a lot of crazy and outlandish things, but I do agree with Pitbull to a certain extent here. I mean, if you go back, it's pretty simple to look at that one red blip recently on Michael Chandler's record. It was when Patricio Pitbull beat him at lightweight to win the belt and, oh, by the way, knocked him out. Now, did Chandler beat Patricky? And can Patricio always hold that over them both? Yes, but to an extent, I think this shows that Bellator's talent level is actually there. And listen, there's nobody that likes to discredit and be negative and really kind of rag on Bellator's talent level than Dana White. And every time Dana White gets asked a question about, oh, well, do you really believe Bellator's light heavyweight division's all that great? He'll say no, and it's built up with mostly old UFC stars. But if you look at Bellator's divisions at lightweight and featherweight, yes, there are some old UFC stars, but in that Bellator Featherweight Grand Prix, who do we have? Names like AJ McKee, names like Patricio, names like even Pedro Carvalho that got beat by Patricio, and the list goes on, Daniel Vichels, and so on. Those are Bellator guys. They're not old UFC guys. They're Bellator guys. So I really do think Bellator's talent level just continues to grow. The Vadim Nemkovs of the world are really showing that off. But the OGs like Patricio, you know, have always been around. And I mean, it really makes you wonder. Patricio was in the UFC, you know, a while ago. How would he have fared?
Yeah, I think there's always going to be one-offs. I don't know if that gives the entire division or the entire talent pool. To say that no one could go over there and have success, I think that, you know, you pick and choose, right? Eddie Alvarez came over and lost his first fight and then went on to be a champion. So for sure there's guys, you know, it's the old argument that the casuals make. Is the worst guy in the UFC better than the best guy in Bellator? Obviously not, because but then the question goes, okay, why is this guy not in the UFC if he's so great? Well, there's a lot of factors that come into it. Money and, you know, availability of the roster and all that sort of stuff. Availability of the contract. So I think that, yeah, I think the Pitbull brothers, both of them, would do very well in the UFC. I think that I don't know that this fight is representative of that, but I think this fight gave him an opportunity to make a point that was already, that's true, and it's an easy point to make. Instead of explaining for 20 minutes why Bellator is on the level of the UFC, he can just say, here's a guy to beat your guy, and I beat him. MMA math, piece of cake. So, yeah, I agree with his comments. I don't think that I agree with the spirit of his comments. I don't think that this fight is the reflection of that necessarily.
That's fair. That's fair.
All right, Craig, let's move on to rank 'em. This is where you come in with this. So the PFL came out this week. They're finally giving us what we begged for, which is fighters, fights, rosters, announcements. How is your inbox? Real quick, how's your inbox looking in terms of PFL emails?
Good question. You set me up. Listen, if you're a media member and you get these PFL emails, sometimes they're locked and loaded, like when they announce their featherweight and lightweight roster or their welterweight and light heavyweight roster. Between those two emails, John, they send out, and it's always in all caps, Professional Fighters League announces partnership with CarParts.com ahead of 2021 season, the official auto parts retailer of the PFL. John, I couldn't give a flying fuck about CarParts.com. Fuck them. I don't care about them. PFL, don't send emails like this. Like, send the important ones. But I go through these emails, John, and I read them all, and then I get that, and then I get, like, two-time world champion Anthony Showtime Pettis signs with the PFL. Well, okay, I'm on that. PFL partners with CAA Sports Licensing to meet global demand for PFL brand and consumer products. Well, I don't give a shit about that. So the PFL, stop sending out emails like this and only give me the important ones, please. But I digress. Sorry, CAA and CarParts.com. I look at these rosters, John, and we talked about it last week. The featherweight and lightweight rosters are great. But did you get a chance to comb through the welterweight and light heavyweight rosters? And if you did, do you think that they match up with the announcement that we got last week whatsoever? Exactly. I set that up to be kind of negative, and your sigh doesn't really, you know, tickle anybody's fancy. But what do you really make? Like, what's your hot take, like my take on CarParts.com and the presser that I had to get?
Listen, I'm not crazy about the light heavyweight division. I'm not overly crazy about the featherweight division, although if we're setting this up to be Lance Palmer and Brandon Lochne, that's interesting. I wouldn't mind seeing that. So I think that, you know, there's some filler here. It's not all killer, but it's the PFL. I think that I see some matchups in each roster that I would like to see in. Like, I'm interested in the final four. I'm not really interested in the initial eight or the initial 10. What are your thoughts? How do you rank these out?
Like, I got excited about these last week, you know, or, you know, in the last few weeks, especially with that lightweight bracket, I guess I should say. Like, Akhmad Aliyev, good fighter. OAM wasn't that great in the UFC, but when Olivier Aubin-Mercier was on, he was pretty good. Clay Collard, you know, carved out a pretty good boxing career here recently. A lot of people are going to know him. Johnny Case from his time with multiple different promotions. Marcin Held. I love Marcin Held. Joe Linton, Luderbach, go look at that guy's record. He's fought a very high-level competition for a really long time. I think he's a great addition. Mikhail Odinstov, pretty good record, pretty good guy to keep your eye on. Obviously, Pettis, Luik Radjabov, they flew in diplomats from his home country to see his last number of fights. That guy is really exciting. And then Natan Schult, two-time millionaire, two-time champion, exciting division. Featherweight, Tyler Diamond, UFC fans are going to know him. Ultimate Fighter fans are going to know him. Bubba Jenkins from Brave CF and Bellator and wrestling. Mavlid Haibulayev, excuse me, go watch his knockout over Damon Jackson. It's the most disgusting thing I've ever seen. You want to see a man melt like a popsicle stick on a warm summer's day? Go watch that Haibulayev knockout. Brendan Lochnane, Shamon Rice, Lance Palmer, Jason Soros, who could never crack it, was always on the regional scene. And I remember on Looking for a Fight, I'm going to cry. I got something in my throat. I'm turning a different shade of red right now. Jason Soros, I wish he made it to the UFC. No, but Dana White kind of ragged on him. And then Sungbin Jo, who had one fight in the UFC against one of the Taymor brothers and was a double champ in another organization in Southeast Asia. He only got the one fight in the UFC. Holy smokes. But, it just didn't work out. It's been one of the weirdest episodes. And then I look at these other two divisions, and John's muted as he tries to talk, so it's even worse.
This is the car
They're
parts.
Not good.
Carparts.com karma's coming back to get you.
Ugh. The light heavyweight division. What can I get excited about? Well, I like Jordan Young with Bellator. I did. Dan Spahn's not terrible. Emiliano Sordi gave back, what was it? Like hundreds of thousands of dollars to his local community when they were ravaged by COVID. That was good to see. I like him. Smiljan Rama really hasn't been able to get it going in the PFL. Tom Lawler, I mean, he hates USADA. We all know that. And his entrances are pretty cool. So we can get excited about him. Jordan Johnson said, up yours, UFC, and went to the PFL. And then he ran into Max Grecian, who beat him and then had a draw against him and ended up in the UFC. I can go on and on for days, John, about all these fighters and really just kind of play brain pretzel with all of them. But the welterweight division sucks and they're missing some names. I can say that much.
Huh. I'm going to stick you to this. Four stars. Pick them from whatever division you want. Four stars that come out of this that either were stars going in or they raised their profile. Who's the
easy peasy lemon squeezy? Yeah, I was going to say Ray Cooper.
Okay.
Rory McDonald. Magomed Kerimov. They're already, decent name. Now, a lot of people might not know Magomed Kerimov, but if you're a PFL fan, you know him. Tom Lawler, even in a loss, is going to be a lot of fun, depending on how you want to crack or call a star. You got Lance Palmer, double champ. You got Schult, double champ. And if you want to throw in somebody that could really impress, I would say either Luderbach, or if Loic Radjabov can go in there and knock off like a huge win against one of these guys at lightweight, you're going to hear about him more.
1 to 10. How excited are you for the season?
Well, if I keep getting carparts.com emails, we'll see. if karma keeps getting me, we'll also see. 1 out of 10, I'm probably not going to do prediction videos on it, but I'm going to take the time to actually watch the events live, and I'll probably tweet about them. So if that's above a 5, if we're going baseline, I'd say probably like a 6,
that's 7. And just for the record, if you're listening, carparts.com, we will happily be sponsored by you. We're fine with who you are. It's the emails that's the issue.
I buy car parts online. I used to be Auto Shack or Auto Shack and Rock Auto. Those are my two go-tos. But listen, carparts.com, you guys could maybe fill that void. I don't know if you ship to Canada, but maybe you're my next.
It's not about you, carparts.com. All right, Craig, let's move on to For the Gram. Craig, Tony Ferguson, and Nate Diaz are being linked to a fight. Some people on Twitter are excited about this. Are you?
I'm down. Like, what's either guy going to gain if they just fight Joe Schmo? Like, if Tony Ferguson gets matched up against, again, one of those two guys that I talked about, Ally Quinta, well, maybe he'll sell some real estate in a fight. Gregor Gillespie, that'd be a good fight. You know what? That's probably the best fight in the top 15 for Tony Ferguson. Do you think we'll get it? Well, probably not. And then for Nate Diaz, are we going to see the rematch with McGregor? Are we going to see the rematch with Jorge Masvidal? Well, he's probably holding out for those. But isn't a fight with Tony Ferguson probably the most competitive one he's going to get? I'm down for this. I'm cool with it. I think at 170 pounds, make it. Book it.
Depending on how much of a conspiracy theorist you are, you can make much. You can make an argument this fight sort of came out of nowhere because it does take attention off Conor McGregor and Nate Diaz. So I don't know if the UFC is interested in Poirier and McGregor. Here's the weird thing about Nate Diaz for me. Every time I'm ready to bury this kid professionally, he does something that reminds me that he's relevant, right? So, like, for years I've said, oh, Nate Diaz will take a fight 6 months after it's actually good for him to take a fight. This fight would be an example. Like, we're going to get this fight a year and a half from now. But then he gets in there with Masvidal, and you're like, oh, shit, this guy still matters. He still gets in there and bangs it out. He hasn't been in there a while. He doesn't look like prime Nate, but he still can hold his own. I just think that, you know, I'm done trying to figure out Nate Diaz or Nick, like, for that matter.
What was the most prime Nate Diaz fight that you can think back to? Like, holy smokes, this guy is amazing. Was it the Conor fight? For me, like, I think back the fight that he had against Takanori Gomi or the fight that he had against Marcus Davis, like almost like a hometown feel, because it was at TD Garden and Marcus Davis from Maine, and he just beat him from pillar to post.
Yeah, those are the three. I mean, those are the ones where you felt like those are the fights that built his legacy to be, even be able to, like, you know, when he got booked with that Conor fight, Conor obviously wasn't who he is now, but he had enough of a name to at least have us make the fight be reasonable, right? Like, okay, we can sign off on this a little bit. And then he just exploded. But yeah, I'm interested in this fight. It seems like these two guys are always, you know, talking about fights that we never see. But again, I'm done trying to figure out Nate Diaz. All right, Craig, let's move on to one Twitter hitter. This week, Justin Gaethje was very critical of Dana White. He said, the reason why this is happening with Poirier is because Dana White literally used, he tried to, he did. He fucked Tony and Dustin. He said, fuck you guys. I'm going to take Chandler, and he's going to be the backup for this title fight. That all happened 3 or 4 months ago. We are human. We have principles. We have morals. And that's what that is. That's why Dustin is saying he won't fight Chandler. Well, I would assume. I don't talk to the guy. Do you think that, one, do you agree with Gaethje? Two, do you admire him going after Dana in this way? Or three, do you just think it's self-serving?
Looks pretty self-serving to me. I mean, listen, I've heard these arguments. You know, we put out a video not that long ago with Fight Night Picks Perry Encounter. If you want to see episodes, make sure you hit us up in the comments. Let us know some Q&A questions. We'll make more videos. We'll try and get John Franklin Incorporated, just like Keeping Score. That's on Fight Night Picks Instagram. All that to say, you know, we kind of matched up the top half of the division. I thought that, you know, a good fight for Oliveira would be Poirier. I thought McGregor to fight RDA. I thought, you know, Michael Chandler and Gaethje's the fight to make. And then everybody blasted me in the comments section. I shouldn't say everybody, but a lot of people. And they seem to think, and they took a hardline stance on this, that Justin Gaethje should have the fight with Dustin Poirier. Do you agree with that one? You know, that's really at the crux of everything for me, and I can't stop focusing on it. And I will find that hill to die on. And the fact that I don't think Poirier should fight Gaethje at this juncture. I think coming off a loss, it doesn't make a lot of sense. But I've been the guy in the past that thought Aldo fighting Jan didn't make any sense. I thought Yoel Romero just continuing to get title shots didn't make any sense.
Well, I think that just because a fight is good doesn't mean that you were wrong for thinking it didn't make sense to get booked. The fight's good because the fight's good. And there are fights that have no business being fights that end up being good. I think that guys earn their bookings based on their performance. And a little bit they're matching up. I mean, listen, when you put Aldo and Jan together, you weren't looking for that to be a good fight. You weren't thinking that Aldo had all this left in the tank. You were thinking that he's a huge name and Jan needs to fight a huge name. And it worked out to be an all right fight. Not that wasn't why it was booked necessarily. You know, we've written Jose Aldo's obituary 5 times in his career. So it's not like he was guns blazing going into that fight. I'm with you. I think that it is a little self-serving on Gaethje's part. But at the same time, if nobody comes and speaks out against some of the stuff that Dana does, there's no accountability. Because if you do it in the media, you lose access. At least if you're a fighter, you got a chance to be critical and stick around. If you're a good fighter who sort of deserves to stick in the UFC, you can be somewhat critical of them. All right, Craig, let's move on to posting to the book. Craig, Frankie Yeager came out this week and said, the day that I don't want to face the best guys, maybe I shouldn't be fighting. So the question here is, one, is he right? And two, should more fighters look at it this way? Should every fighter be either chasing a belt, or can this just be a job where you're the 12th best guy in the world and that's all you're ever going to be?
I mean, lump this weekend's half of the headliner into this statement, right? I mean, Alistair Overeem, this is his last push to a title, and if he loses, that's probably it. Frank Yeager's probably in the same boat. I would think, you know, Frankie loses his next fight to Corey Sandhagen, also this weekend, that maybe Frankie would hang around a little bit longer. He's what, months younger than Alistair? Because he's 39 and Alistair's 40. I would think, you know, a lot of fighters should do this, but we talked about this in the past. It's a business. And I mean, you're there to collect a paycheck. So if you're a guy, and again, this was the example we used, if you're a guy like Carlos Condit, and you're getting all that Reebok money, you're top of the pops in terms of the Reebok money every card, but also you're a former interim champ, you've had so many fights, like you're due for a lot of money. If you're a guy like Carlos Condit, I realize, you know, he's looked good in his last two fights, but what do you do if you're Carlos? You're out of the top 15. Do you just keep taking fights because you can, you know, bank on the fact that you're already a star and you're going to get that paycheck? Listen, I think it can just be a job. I think for some people that are still up there at the top performing optimally, like an Edgar, like a Jose Aldo right now, that, yeah, it's fine to continue to say these things and chase a belt, but it's a tough one. I can separate them both, but at the end of the day, you want these people to get paid, so hopefully they can. And if they can, they should.
All right, Craig, you're up. Let's hit the flurry.
All right, John. So James Vick retired. Did you watch XMMA on YouTube last weekend?
No.
I watched every single second of it. Not the 90-minute intermission that they had, which is really weird. But, yeah, he got finished badly. Andre Fiallo knocked him out, and then he retired. Any hot take on this one?
Not really. I mean, I didn't really care too much for this kid when he was around, so I'm not really going to care that he's gone. I think that, you know, there's definitely a point at which
of getting knocked out.
Well, there's definitely a point at which his career seemed to go, I don't want to say from a karma perspective, but he sure was talking a lot of shit before Justin Gaethje fight. And ever since then, it has been downhill with, you know, skis and no poles. I mean, this kid couldn't be going down the hill any faster. So for me, I don't know. I mean, we thought we had something in this kid. Now, if you look at, he beat, submitted Abel Trujillo, knocked out Paulo Reyes, knocked out Joe Duffy, decision over Francisco Trinaldo, got knocked out by Benil Dariush before all of that. So, I don't know. I mean, he was a little bit of a creation, but, yeah, it went really bad really quick for this kid. This is 2 years.
Yeah, it did. And, I mean, you know, I guess good for him to realize that you know, maybe past the point of no return. And, you know, love him or hate him, think about him what you will, you don't want to see somebody take punishment like that. So, you know, good for him to get out now. And I mean, maybe set himself up quite well. You still have that UFC name attached to yourself. So Sean O'Malley fight announced with Thomas Almeida. Is it fireworks? Like, what are you thinking here?
This feels like a Bellator move, man. This feels like, I mean, Thomas Almeida once upon a time used to be a guy. He was out there crushing people. We thought that he was going to bring back Shoot the Box. And then he just kind of went away. And it's like, this is kind of like bringing Thomas Almeida back, quote unquote, for this fight is kind of to me like bringing Roger Huerta, you know, back to fight somebody in Bellator. It's like, because we kind of know who this guy was and he kind of had a run, maybe he can start to, you know, rejuvenate O'Malley's career. And if he doesn't, then, you know, we have this kid that we've already done some work promoting ourselves. So either way we win. I like the fight. I do, but it just seems odd.
Listen, Thomas didn't look great in his last fight against Jonathan Martinez Dragon. But Sean O'Malley, man, like you get hit by a leg kick. All right. You're making excuses that you're still undefeated and whatever. That's cool. You're talking about doing heroin on your podcast with a kid in your lap. All right. If Sean O'Malley loses to Thomas Almeida, like that hype train has really hit the skids. So yeah, we'll see what happens. Hopefully it's dynamic. Hopefully O'Malley's, you know, injury free and we get a good fight out of it. But yeah, it's weird. You have one former like real top prospect in Almeida and a guy that's just kind of in limbo right now. Lima versus Amosov. That's the next title fight for the Bellator welterweight strap. You excited about this one? You better.
I couldn't be more excited.
You better could be
more. No, I am. I mean, listen, I like Lima. The other guy, I mean, you know, he is who he is. But,
oh,
what? Tell me, come on.
My poor hurt. Yaroslav Amosov's amazing. Oh, I love Yaroslav Amosov. I mean, undefeated. Now he's fighting out of America Top Team. He's an old tech crap guy. He's got a win over Roberto Soldic. My guy, Yaroslav Amosov. And this isn't a shot at you, and we're pals, and I know we're going to move past this. But everybody in MMA media, other than like Dan Tom and a couple of like the really hardcores, like, oh man, who's this guy Amosov? Like, ah, forget about Amosov. Man, no. Like, he outgrappled Ed Ruth. He took Ed Ruth down. That's impressive. Abu Zaitsar got a USADA suspension.
Whoa. Let's just not step past this. If you're so high on this kid, here's what I want you to do. I want you to put your money where your podcast is. If you're so high on Lima and Amosov, you fight companion that fight. If you're telling me this thing is the second coming,
you want me to drown my channel and not get any views? Like, what do you want me to do here?
I'll fight companion it with you if you're telling me this is such a great fight that I have to watch.
All right. That's fair. Abu Zaitsar, back to what I was saying. Big time USADA suspension. The guy's 34. His brother likes to try and smuggle in weird bags and the biggest fight of his life. What's up with these crazy Zaitsar brothers?
I don't know, man. I don't. What is, you know, I can't wrap my head around this. I you get these opportunities and it's pretty clear cut. This one makes a little more sense to me than cutting bracelets and sneaking bags. But because, you know, the guy's trying to get a competitive edge. Everybody is either, if you're a fighter, if you're an athlete of any measure, you come to the point of where you have to make the decision. You know somebody that can get you the stuff, right? If you're Cody Garbrandt, TJ Dillashaw's right. No, I'm kidding. But, you know, I'm saying this comes to every guy that's a high-level athlete. So that I understand more than my man cutting bracelets and whatnot. But, you know, these opportunities for guys like this, they don't come around every day. And I think that they need to be taken a little more seriously than they're being taken.
I feel like that whole bag incident must have put the biggest bullseye on Abu Zaitsar because, you know, maybe this USADA suspension, again, you don't want to talk about these theories and allegations and such, but it is a weird bucket of muscles, as I say, that one brother gets cut and then this happens. It's very strange. Look into it, as Eddie Bravo would say. My last one, and we won't focus on this one a lot because John Nash has done great work on it. Jonathan of, what is it, Now Loon over on Twitter has done a good job of this. Friend of the show, prediction guru, Patrick Ogier's done a lot of work on this one. One Championships financials, John.
Prediction guru.
Yikes, they are in shambles. They're not great. So I just wanted to end on that. Your thoughts?
My thoughts are is that if there's enough distance between you and reality or the present, wherever something's happening, the epicenter of anything, if you put enough distance between you and the epicenter of something, you can say whatever you want, and you're daring people to do the legwork to figure it out, right? If you're saying the epicenter of fighting is Las Vegas, and you're in, you know, wherever one championship is, in China or wherever they
Singapore.
Are.
Singapore. Get it right. Whoa.
Got it right. Singapore. Who's going to be able to do that legwork? I mean, yeah, we got the internet. We can get out there. But it's like, I just think that they're taking advantage of their disconnection from the epicenter of the sport to sort of play some smoke and mirrors and make people think that they're a bigger deal than they actually are.
The article that I read today was by Tech in Asia, and it's a guy that I actually follow over on LinkedIn. Not a big LinkedIn guy, but you can find me over there for my professional life. Terrence Lee. And the headline of the article is One Championship made $62 million but lost $131 million in 2019. And they were critical of Bloody Elbow for kind of leaking or releasing some numbers as to how much money they made and lost in the past. And obviously that's been proven, positive or it's been affirmed, I guess, in the media here recently. It's weird, man. It's just really weird. And a lot of people ask, well, why don't you cover One Championship? I mean, the product's great, but like in the back of my mind, it's, man, like stuff like this just really, it just makes me not want to even bother. Like, it's just, yeah. It sucks.
All right, Craig, let's give shouts to MMA Reddit. let's start the conversation. This week, I want to talk about Tyson Chartier and an interview that he did with respect to Calvin Kattar. So the quote was in the interview, and this is about him deciding not to stop the fight with Max Holloway. He said, "It definitely did get close to us stopping it. Sitting in the corner, and every time things were getting really bad, Calvin's back was to us, and we see Max, and we see Herb. There was a couple of times where we were like, is he going to stop it? And I was hoping Herb would stop it. And then all of a sudden, we saw he wasn't going to stop, and we were like, should we throw in the towel? And then I'm thinking, we're going to throw in the towel, and then Calvin would crack him. Then he'd get off the fence and start landing shots. Like, damn it. Craig, listen, we've looked at this a lot of different ways, but I'm just going to say this very simply. Are there not doctors and are there not referees involved in these fights? Why does this stuff always fall to the corner? Why does the corner always have to get guilted into not caring enough about their fighters?
Listen, I think the onus is definitely on the referees. I've been critical of one of the 11 Herbs and Spices that's followed by KFC. But listen, Herb Dean is, when he's on, and he's the best referee in the world. But listen, he has off days, and we all do. It's just unfortunate that on my off day, I could be sitting at home playing video games, just having a bad one, and Herb Dean's on TV in front of hundreds of thousands of people making life-altering decisions. It's really difficult for a guy like Herb Dean. It's difficult for the doctors. It's a difficult job for the corners. The one thing that I've been critical of in the past, and we've talked about it on the show before, is with MMA corners compared to boxing corners. How often have we seen boxing corners throw in the towel? It seems like a fairly, you know, normal process over there. And that's the thing, right? It's a little bit more normalized in boxing, and it's not so much in MMA. I wish it was more normalized for MMA corners to throw in the towel. I mean, like, are people afraid that, oh, the promoter's going to think less of this fighter because their corner threw in the towel? I don't personally think so. I wish it was something that was more normalized. But at the same time, if somebody's getting the tar beaten out of them, why don't you end the fight if you're the referee? Like in boxing, standing eight count, or if you get knocked down a number of times, all right, fight's over. And that's more normal. But in MMA, you'd have four or five knockdowns in a round, and we're just going to keep this thing going because it's a lot of fun to watch, right? So I wish that we took more of a harsher stance on fights that are so one-sided. But I don't know if we will.
Well, you're damned if you do, and you're damned if you don't if you're the ref. I really think the doctors should have more of a say in this because they know more what the accumulation of damage could be. I think that, so for example, you know, if you're representing Calvin Kattar and you throw in a towel, Calvin Kattar quit. That's the way they're going to look at it. They're not going to look at the corner throwing the towel. They're going to, it's a quitting situation. And I think that's, you know, he didn't answer the bell. And that's the one thing that is unforgivable in sports is quitting. And I think but go ahead.
Well, there's two different circumstances, right? There's somebody that gets their face beat in and they can't continue and the corner throws it in. And then there's like Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. that gets jabbed a couple times and he's like, no, I'm not doing this. And he stops in his corner and he probably could have given it some more. But like in a beating like this, why not?
Yeah, I guess the upside to it is, you know, I don't know what the doctors and the referees think they're robbing us of. Now, in fairness to the referee more than the doctor, it's only been a handful of times that happened recently, and I wish I could remember the scenario behind it, but where a doctor is like really heavily criticized for them calling the fight, right?
Sorry, I don't mean to cut you off, but it's been one hell of a show. The fight that Sam Hughes had against Tisha Torres, where her eye got all sorts of messed up. I see she has another fight that was just announced in the last day or two. Credit to Marcel Dorf. Go check him out. He was the one that put that one out there. But the corner ended the fight between the first and second round because of the injury to her eye. And they really saved her in that one. The fight with Sarah Alper when she fought Jessica Rose Clark, where she's sliding down. She's almost on her butt. She gets kneed to the face. Like, that fight was a beating beforehand. Why did we have to wait until a possible illegal knee to figure out if the fight has ended? And then at the time, like, I'm pretty sure that fight kept going, if I'm not mistaken. I think it did. I could be wrong, but there's all of those circumstances, like you point out. Like, it's yeah. Why don't the doctors have more of an overreach? Why don't the referees feel like they can't end the fight? Like, it's just, it's an odd bucket of muscles.
It is, and I think that I'm advocating for the doctors here because I think that the other two groups don't want to deal with the criticism. You know, the referees don't want to hear it, and the corners, more particularly, don't want to live with the fact that they just robbed a guy they're close to. That's the point of a referee, is that you are an impartial third party that does not have a stake in who wins or loses here. Doesn't matter to you who wins or loses. You're just as inclined for you're just as happy for Max Holloway as you would be for Calvin Kattar if he won, which is why you're in there. So I think that, you know, the doctors and the referees need to toughen up a little bit and stop putting the corners in such a position. And with that, this episode of Early Stoppage is in the books. Craig can be followed at Craig Allen FNP. I can be followed at SM Cornerman. The fight has been stopped. We'll see you next week. Craig, say something witty.
John, episode 50 plus, we are going on a heater, and I am not going to drink pre-workout before the show anymore. Let's get into it.